For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with the trials and tribulations of the non-league football world. Joining me this week on our most northerly of shows this season is our very own favourite northerner, the voice of FC United Radio, and wearer of some of the snazziest tailored affairs in non-league. It's Swampy. Good evening, Swampy.
Yeah, good evening, Tim. Good evening, listeners.
And it's good to have you back. Well, you were poorly last week, but you're on the mend?
Yeah, on the mend. It's been trials and tribulations. It always seems to happen around a Thursday, unfortunately, over the recent months. So hopefully back fighting fit now and raring to go to the end of the season.
That reminds me of my school days. A Thursday afternoon, if there was thunder in the air, there was always a fight. I went to a boys' school, and Thursday afternoon, there was always that. If it was going to kick off, it'd be Thursday afternoon. Maybe we should have more football on a Thursday evening. Thursday evening football. Be a bit
oh,
more.
Oh, goodness gracious!
A fierce affair. We I don't know. We might need more of that VAR or whatever it is. You know. Anyway, it's not been it's been quite a depressing week, really. It's cold. It's wet. Some people have had snow. Some postponements. And in the world of non-league, all appears to be full of doom and gloom. We'll get to Chester and Hartlepool later. But this week's one, since last week's recording, we've heard of National League Macclesfield staff. They were paid late due to an error that the majority shareholder, Amar Al-Adi, he did admit that it was his fault. But, they were paid late. There was big hoo-ha about that. Then we've seen in the Italian Premier, Dulwich Hamlet's issues with their landlords. They've hit a new turn when there was a communication mix-up with their stadium operator. That was the official line, and that meant a postponement for their London Senior Cup match late on with Harrowborough. That's been moved to, I think, 20th of February now. And in the National North, the York City Supporters Trust AGM, they heard club auditor Steve Kilmartin insists that he believes the club will go out of business if the trust members voted against any future proposal to relinquish all their shares to Chairman Jason McGill. And then back in the National League, you've got Dagenham and Redbridge issuing a club statement that consultants have been engaged to market the club for sale following Glenn Hopkin Consortium's takeover of the football club. But despite, I think, £1.3 million being raised by that takeover, the same hasn't been enough to cover losses of last season and up to the turn of the year. And Mr. Hopkin said from 2018 now, he's no longer going to fund that shortfall. So that means that the club are, moving up the creek, certainly. And their club statement has read, obviously caused some problems and adjustments in our playing squad have already taken place, with some further player releases almost certain to occur over the coming weeks. However, whilst the club has undoubtedly some serious problems and very quickly requires a new purchaser, it does not have large amounts of debt. So, I mean, that's a good sign, I suppose, that they're not debt up to their eyeballs like some of the clubs that we're hearing about. But we're already, following all of those stories up, and there's even more to follow up as well, which is a bit disconcerting. But Swampy, perhaps it's a sign that football clubs can't just be run as football clubs. Passion isn't enough to run a club.
Well, passion certainly isn't enough just to run a football club. But there are many football clubs that are successful. Their business plans are good business plans, and be it in the very lower leagues of non-league football or indeed the top end. There's many clubs. I think in 2014-15 season in the National League, the vast majority of those clubs finished in small profit and a couple with a small loss, so it can be done. I mean, if you look at Wrexham, and when they became, fan-owned, they had huge debts. They turned that around, and they're now a club that are doing well. I mean, York City, obviously, a 25% stake they have in the football club. And FSF and the supporters direct, I think, have been up and spoken to them, and I think they're quite right in saying that before they do anything, perhaps before you give £50,000 away a year, as they have been doing, is you need to look at the idea of what's happening going forward. You don't give away some money without having a business plan. You don't go to the bank, do you, and ask for a loan without having a business plan in place. So there are a lot of problems in football. We know that there are clubs that are aiming and trying to get to the promised land, so to speak, and spending money, but the clubs can be successful and also be financially viable. I think we've got to find that balance somewhere.
You've got great experience of the fan ownership model, and as you say, that there is a lot of help out there. Unlike lots of other issues that we have with football at this level, for actually running the club and, you know, fans getting involved, there is a lot of help out there if people are prepared to go and help, go and ask.
Yeah, I mean, more and more help is available. You know, there are institutions and bodies that can give good advice, and, you know, football clubs such as FC United in the past, and I've been around and spoken to many other clubs, AFC Wimbledon the same. You know, they were the club that advised FC United of Manchester. But there are many other clubs out there that have got good experience. And, you know, I think what you need to do is, if you are going or having problems, is there's got to be openness, accountability. I mean, FC United, don't forget, a few years ago, we're in a very, very precarious position where, again, financially, we had some problems. It was pretty down to transparency and a few other bits and bobs. And once we knew exactly the full extent of everything, it can be dealt with. Until you know the extent that you're dealing with any football club, it's very hard to move forward. But as you rightly say, there are a lot of bodies out there that can help nowadays. And the one thing that supporters always want to do is make sure that that football club survives. And really, we should be looking at, rather than survival, we should be looking at thriving and community-based football clubs, more supporters involved, because supporters can, certainly as far as I'm concerned, make a football club successful. But as I say, there's lots of help out there, so let's utilise it.
Yeah, and a large number of those clubs that we mentioned there, ex-Football League clubs, including, you know, some of those, like Dagenham and Redbridge, have always been renowned as being one of the more financially cautious clubs, you know, both in non-league and when they went into the Football League. So do you think, as much as we love the magic of two up, two down, is that potentially a problem, this difference between Football League and non-league? You know, often you see a club going from non-league into the Football League and they have a good couple of seasons at least, but it's the clubs that come down, they always find it much more difficult.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of ideas and thought processes that I've had over the years following non-league football. And if you look at the conference now, many of the clubs within the conference themselves are full-time. The step up can be one that you can thrive upon, but at some stage you find a lot of these clubs coming back down. Parachute payments and so on and so forth are there initially, but we've seen many a great club and a very famous name, you know, either disappearing completely or becoming a Phoenix club or languishing, let's say, in lower leagues. For me, I would disband League Two and make it a North and South division. I would basically make the conference itself, or the National League, I should say, those Northern teams put into League Two North and those Southern teams into League Two South. And I would make the National League North and South the feeder club into League Two. That would give club stability. Financially, we talked, a couple of weeks ago to the chairman of Morpeth Town about travelling costs and how it was such a burden on a football club. And let's not forget, I think it was about 1959, maybe 1960, when we had regional football leagues. And for me, that is a good way of going forward. Also, you heard me talk a couple of weeks ago about maybe salary capping, which may be something that you have to look at. Maybe also very stores business plans that, you know, basically have to work to, and budgets are set in a certain place. But I think the two up, two down for me, going from the conference into the Football League, because everyone seems to think that the promised land is in the Football League. And for some clubs, you know, that were ex-league clubs, I can understand, because their supporters were used to Football League games week in, week out. But I think what we've spoken about on many occasions over the years, Tim, is that when clubs do come down, they have to embrace where they are, because if they don't, they find it very, very tough and difficult. And if they do embrace it, then there is an opportunity to go back up. But there are clubs, the likes of Workington, the likes of Bradford Park Avenue. Now, these are ex-league football clubs, Halifax, in more recent times. But Bradford Park Avenue were a league club until 1974. You've got, you know, many other clubs in our division that have been league clubs in the past are now semi-professional and well-established semi-professional clubs. And those clubs that come down, going straight back up always isn't the answer, because it's a very difficult thing to do. And finances, as we say, are vastly important. I mean, there's lots of things we can do. And hopefully, maybe football can change for the better going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting what you said about, you know, fan-owned clubs and when FC United were started up and you're getting advice from other clubs. That's one thing that doesn't seem to happen, does it? There's not the, you know, in any other profession, every other month you get an email saying, do you want to come to this conference, you know, rub shoulders with everybody else. In the world of football, there's a nice little unit where, you know, I can pick the phone up to various people and have a call. But other than when you go to a game where you meet that club's officials there, there's not many opportunities to meet and learn off of other clubs, is there? There's a lot of silence.
There is a lot of silence, but there also are some very, very forward-thinking football leagues. I mean, the Northern Premier League, one of those that invite all 68 members of the to different functions. They work as a big group, as a big unit, and that's been very much the benefit of the Northern Premier Division. And if other clubs other leagues embrace that, and I'm sure certain do, but you could look at maybe that model of maybe going to your local, you know, league club. But we know league clubs themselves are are chasing the money, aren't they? So sometimes their models aren't particularly good. You know, the owners of football clubs, that they want to, you know, spill the beans on how the football club can survive and work going forward. It would be nice, as you rightly say, to have these seminars and sit down and discuss the financial side of football, opposed to the playing side. Because you can get, as we all know, you can get lots of help on the footballing side of things. But when it comes to the finances and the support mechanisms in place, you know, that needs to be there at all times, rather than the bucket collections, which ordinarily mean if you've got a bucket collection outside your football ground, you're imminently about to go under.
Yeah, maybe we should just sell specialist non-league football buckets. We could,
It's
probably a market there. Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's lots of ideas. Hopefully, we can get some of them off the ground, particularly over the summer. We've got a bit of time on our hands. As always, we've always got time on our hands, us two. But anyway, moving on. There's been, in the doom and gloom week that we've had, there's been more managerial changes this week as well. Buxton have parted company with Ross McIntosh after 6 years with the club. They're mid-table in the Northern Premier now. Andy Morrell has gone from Tamworth, just two wins in 12 in the National North, and they're 7 points off the playoffs in the same division. Gainsborough Trinity, their management team, Dave Fairclough, Terry Fleming, have gone, and the club are just 1 point above the relegation spot. So it's difficult to keep up, Swampy, isn't it, remembering who's where and when.
Yeah, lots of comings and goings. It's that time of the year, isn't it, that certain managers lose their jobs based upon the possibility of being relegated. Those people in charge of football clubs who are thinking of maybe promotion, so they might need an extra push. I mean, to lose the likes of McIntosh, I mean, he's the second, second longest serving manager at Buxton. Admittedly, they've not had a brilliant season this season, but he's a very, very good manager. They've got plans, I think, for next season for a 4-3 or 4G pitch. I thought he would have been perfect fit for them, because there'd be more revenue coming into the football club that they can possibly utilise. Andy Morrell, again, a great name in the non-league circuit, two wins in 12. And, you know, at this moment in time, every week, you know, someone's either stepping in or stepping out or being reinstated. It's the nature of football, unfortunately. It's such a fickle business that we're in, even in the semi-pro game. It's not a surprise, really. But when it all comes in one big week, like we are talking at this moment in time, it's sort of like, it sounds like a tidal wave. But over the season, you know, it levels itself out, I suppose.
Well, I'm sure there's plenty more to come in and fill those posts as well. Lots of other news besides as well, but for time issues. Cleethorpes Town, they've been deducted 12 points in the Northern League First Division South. Fielded an illegible player, a loan player not signed correctly. He then played seven fixtures, and that drops the club out of the automatic promotion spots and into the tight playoffs, but with games in hand to try and get back up into that spot. You know, I've always said that the football secretary is probably the most difficult job, and most unsung hero award should go to secretary. I'm not sure what's gone on there. It is so complicated to sign players and get things right, and every now and then you are going to drop one of those balls.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think one of the worst ones is the international clearance, isn't it? Like, you know, from Wales, you get that a lot of the time, don't you? There was international clearance that you thought, we're still using, you know, the antiquated fax for the information to come through nowadays.
It's only on a club's website that you actually ever see a fax number nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed. And it's one of those, isn't it, where, you know, probably done in all innocence. Well, certainly would have done in all innocence. 7 games and 12 points deducted. I suppose they'll be thankful that they're not in a relegation battle, and that then points may have taken them bottom of the division. They've still got a chance, but as I say, the rules are there, and unfortunately, sometimes a slight oversight or not realising what's happened, football clubs are punished very, very severely, it would seem.
Mm. And one other thing, if you didn't see Sutton managers Paul Doswell's Twitter account this week, it's well worth a look to various comments from Dos on the realistic possibility of Sutton getting promotion into the Football League and then having to rip up their new 3G pitch to gain that promotion. And again, we'll be doing more on that in the coming weeks. But there's so much going on. We could have a 24-hour rolling news channel. I'm not sure people would want to wake up to me at 3 a.m, but hey ho.
Yeah, I think most people have already zoned out of this show already. 20 minutes, so 24 hours, I'm not quite sure about. But just going back to that, you know, the 3G pitch situation. I mean, if national teams can play international games on their qualifying games for World Cups, why on earth can't good quality 3G, 4G generation pitches now be used in the Football League at that level? You know, where we have that yo-yo up and down, down and up. It's absolutely ridiculous because pro clubs are using them to train on week in, week out, and the quality nowadays is not as it used to be. And you know, financially, the implication there for Sutton could be huge, because if they don't have another training pitch, all the money that they'll be generating in regards to using community clubs and kids and so on and so forth on there, they're going to lose that revenue, because you can't. A grounds person is going to allow you to do all that 7 days a week on a normal football pitch.
Yeah, and the irony being that the Football League may well decide and change their rules, but that'll be in the summer, and that'll be too late for Sutton to have made that decision.
it's a crazy one, really. Common sense should take place, really. I think you should be said, look, you know, if you're being promoted from the National League into the Football League, you've got a season grace. You can play on a 3G pitch, and then at the end of that, you know, if you know you're staying up, you can. If the rule, they want to keep the rule, you can't use them, you rip it up and you put a grass pitch in. But, it, you know, if they get relegated, it's absolutely pointless.
OK, so to our first story about clubs in crisis this week. We've reported in recent shows about the issues facing the fan-run club Chester FC. Plenty of fundraising, plenty of fan engagement, but what exactly is the situation there? Back on the board to try and steady the ship, Jeff Banks, who I hope joins us on the line now, is here to tell us some more. Good evening, Jeff.
Good evening, Tim. You OK?
I'm good. Now, you were part of establishing the new club back in, 2010, and then you stepped down after, I think, 4 years on the board, then 5 years as media man, to spend time with your young family. Now, as far as I'm aware, your family's still young, but your club needs you again rather desperately.
Well, yeah, my family's certainly still young, and they still have to come first, obviously. But yeah, the situation at the club, you know, I think a few mistakes have been made. And I think, you know, it's time for everybody to pull together, and a few of ourselves who were on the original board thought that we could actually help and add value to the football club again, and that's why we've all signed up for it again. So hopefully, you know, we can help put things right.
Can you, in a nutshell, what's the position short term for the club at Chester at the moment?
Okay, so the short term position, basically the club needed to find £50,000 in the short term, because the main issue with the club was the cash flow. So if that money wasn't found, then potentially the club could end up having no cash by the end of March, or potentially sooner. So the immediate concern was to obviously raise this £50,000, you know, as fast as we can by way of, you know, donations, but also, you know, trying to put on some fundraising events, and basically doing anything we can just to, you know, support the club we love. You know, it's a completely different situation to back in 2009 when, you know, we were up against sort of one family who was very difficult to deal with. But everybody, you know, knows the situation at Chester. We're a fan-owned football club now. And as I say, it's about putting, you know, putting things right, following the mistakes that have been made. But I think, in all honesty, you know, the board that were there previously, and some are still there now. They're all Chester fans. It's been a very steep learning curve for everybody, you know, and everybody just wants to do what was right for their club. But obviously, we've just found ourselves in a situation now that we just need to, you know, to correct as soon as possible.
And I mean, you've been there before, and you, as you say, you know, everybody's a fan. No, nobody, you know, makes mistakes on purpose, and sort of. Course, yeah. But it's not easy being involved in a football club, is it? So it must have been not a difficult decision, I suppose, because it is your club, and you'll do anything to help save it. But it's not the simplest of decisions, just to say, yeah, okay, I'll step up and I'll help out again, because you never really know what's going to come out the cupboard.
No, it was difficult. You know, a lot of sort of conversations that have been had, and, you know, trying to establish, you know, what went wrong and how to fix it. But also, I think that the club needed a little bit of guidance again to take it forward. And, you know, thankfully, we've been able to, I mean, let's put it this way, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, you know, we had to sell the dream to the supporters, you know, in a similar way that FC United have obviously had to do. And they got a great backing, you know, from the start. And, you know, they helped us as well when we were starting out too. So I think in terms of the bigger footballing world, the football family comes together at times like this. And certainly the Chester FC family has come together, and, you know, we feel much, much stronger. There was a good, honest meeting a couple of weeks ago where all this did, you know, come out for the fans to actually hear and see for themselves. But from that moment, you know, from the end of that meeting, it was optimism that we could actually turn things around. You know, we've seen the City Fans United membership, you know, increase by 50% just in the last 10 days alone, which is unbelievable. But that's what we need to do now. We need to group together, raise the money, and then even if we get that £50,000, which we're all very confident we will, then we need then to build up the reserves, because that's what's been eaten into. You know, and a football club at our level, being fan-owned, there's no sugar daddy. You know, it's down to us to raise the money to take it forward and exist. And that's the next step, basically.
And Swampy.
Yeah, well, Jeff, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Not circumstances we want to be talking about, but we're talking about, you know, fan ownership being very, very positive. As a football club, obviously, Chester of, you know, back in 2010, I remember coming to Gig Lane, the supporters, and that rally that was had, and the amount of work that was done, and you're galvanising all the people of Chester coming together. And you know, it's been a fantastic rise from, you know, where you started again. Now in the National League, do you think perhaps this season it's been maybe just a step too far, or a step slightly too quickly for the football club? The fan ownership model we know works, but has it been a situation where we're chasing that league status again? Obviously, as an ex-league club, supporters want to be there, and perhaps sometimes you're reaching for the stars before really, you know, you've got everything in place to get there.
I think there's a certain element in that, absolutely. I mean, it's everybody's dream to become, you know, a football league club again. You know, obviously there's been trouble at Chester for, you know, the best part of the last 25, 30 years, which the fans have had to endure. But certainly losing the football league status, you know, it was difficult to take, and I think we all want to get back there. I think the early years when we reformed, we made so many friends along the way. And it was great, you know, going to the grounds that we visited, including, you know, Gig Lane when we played there. I still remember that day, you know, when the parade was going around the pitch, and there was so much of an emphasis on the youth and the local community, and that's exactly what we wanted to bring, you know, to Chester. And I think maybe, you know, along the way, obviously, we've been aiming high to try and get through the leagues. And I think, you know, it was always going to be a difficult battle from the conference when we sort of got back into, or the National League as it is, obviously. I think it was always going to be a different battle then, because you come up against clubs that are all of a sudden owned by, you know, generous benefactors, if you like, for want of a better phrase. And you've got a different kind of challenge on your hands there. I think what we hoped would happen, that we would stabilise as a club in the National League. We obviously had a couple of skirmishes, you know, with relegation. Obviously, we saw Hereford, unfortunately, you know, fold at the time, which did give us a reprieve. But you know, obviously, genuinely at that time, you know, we felt we were doing things the right way and kind of deserved that reprieve, really. But you know, they've struggled, well, we've struggled since as a football club, and I think you know it does give you a reality check. But as I say, I think we'd hope to stabilise a lot more than what we've done. I think the playing side of things has let us down this year, which then in turn, you know, if you're getting bad results on the pitch and it's not happening, you know, we nearly went a year without a home win, and yeah. that will unfortunately mean that, you know, fans stop coming, and that's our battle now to try and bring those fans back. And I think for us, it's obviously the aim is to be a sustainable football club playing at the highest level. That's always been the aim. But obviously, you know, we'd love to get back to the Football League, but we just have to do things the right way. And if, you know, if the worst happens for us this season, I say the worst, but if we end up getting relegated, you know, I certainly do think we'll be a stronger club next year, even if we do go down. But there's so much competition in that league, as you know. You know, nobody would take anything for granted. In the National League North, it's all about sort of, as I say, doing the right thing, putting things right, and being a stronger unit. And you know, let's sort of see what we can do. But hopefully, the lads will manage to pull some wins out of the bag and keep us up. But you know, there'll still be a challenge next season. You know, with playing budgets being probably one of the lowest in the National League, so it's a fine balance. But everybody wants to stay up. But you know, the finances have got to be sorted out first before we can think about anything else.
And those finances, is that because there's a debt there as well that's causing this issue with the cash flow, or is it just
there's no debt at the football club. The way the club was set up would ensure that there were no debts. You know, we don't sort of take on loans or anything like that. I think the problem being is that the crowds that were budgeted for at the start of the season, you know, we weren't seeing that kind of volume coming through the turnstiles. You know, and a couple of other factors, like we're playing budgets having to be maintained as best as possible. I think it's led to a few issues that way. But there's definitely no debt at the football club. We can only spend what we have coming in. And that's what I was referring to before about living sort of month, you know, month to month and existing. You know, it's no secret at our club that the club would spend roughly about £85,000-£90,000 a month. So we have to have at least that amount coming in, you know. And I think the issue at the moment with the cash flow situation, once that's addressed and we can look forward, because you'll obviously be plugging season tickets for next year and it's all about making it affordable for everybody. I know, you know, we've been criticised in the past for the ticket prices. I think we've tried to keep it realistic, and it certainly needs to be for next season to attract the fans that have, you know, have maybe not come last, you know, in this last 12 months. It's a case of trying to attract those back and making the actual match day experience, you know, much, much better. And I know from the time when we did play FC United, it was one of the best atmospheres I can remember. And, you know, we sort of hope that we can sort of rekindle that a little bit.
Swampy?
Yeah, I was just saying, obviously, you know, we've had a couple of people on from Chester over the season. You know, Marcus Bignot, obviously, as a manager now. But we were talking to them with the long-term plan, and that plan being one to go perhaps to a full-time side, obviously trying to compete in the National League. Is that something now that you're going to have to reconsider, looking at the budgets? And as you say, if the worst comes to the worst, even though, you know, there'll be a lot of more local money games for you next season in the National League North, has that all been taken into consideration in regards to moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you have to look at every single, you have to look at everything connected with the football club and see sort of which is the best way to take it forward. I mean, we, in terms of going full time, I mean, the lads went from sort of two, you know, two, maybe three training sessions in the week going to four. So it's not sort of like full time in the Football League or Premier League. It's a little bit different to that. But I think maybe, you know, it sort of hindered maybe a few of the players in terms of their commitment, because obviously some have, you know, other roles to play elsewhere in their sort of lives, which meant they couldn't sort of commit to the extra training. But also, you know, I do think that you can attract, I mean, we've seen before, we can attract some excellent part-time players, you know, to the football club. I think, you know, as I say, it's more of an ambition really to be up there, you know, as a full-time club, but you have to get the off-the-pitch stuff right before, you know, you can sort of look that far in advance. So to answer the question, yes, you know, it is sort of all being looked at, and, you know, we just want to make sure we do the right thing going forward.
And just finally from me, just have you had any support, any conversations with the FSF or Supporters Direct?
I've not had any myself, and that's not to say we haven't, because we've got different people looking after different things, since we've come back onto the board. But there are strong links between both of the organisations and Chester FC. So if they haven't already, I'm sure there will be sort of dialogue between the two. I think we've just been sort of, because it's been a situation that's developed very, very quickly, you know, we've had to sort of put a lot of efforts into fundraising to make sure that we've actually got the football club to actually enjoy and then work on, which is why obviously there's a lot of fundraising events sort of taking place, in the next few weeks.
And a big one next week, I believe.
Yeah, a very big one. It's one, quite obviously non-league show is quite familiar, I think, with the story with Colin Murray getting involved with the football club. That was all born of a conversation, back on Radio 5 in 2010 when we were trying to put the club together. Colin wanted to lend his support, so which he did. And then, obviously, after the news came out the other week about the finances, got on the phone to Colin, bugged him a little bit to see if we could do something to put an event on. So there was all kinds of ideas bandied around one Sunday morning, and then the next day we were already sort of talking about putting an All Stars match on, which Colin has amazingly managed to get Michael Owen to play in as well. So it's great for. For people like Michael, who've got like a background at Chester, certainly with his father as well, who used to play for us back in the 70s. So Colin's putting together a team of all-stars to take on a Chester side, which is managed by Neil Young. And obviously Neil was instrumental in, the three titles, the successive titles in the early days. And I think it's a chance for everybody to come down to the ground. And, a lot of times you see sort of players go at the end of the season, you don't get a chance to say thank you, for their efforts. And some of these players that are coming back are those type of players that people just love to see, a few years ago. And hopefully we'll have a few surprises along the way as well. So it's a big event that we're hoping, will bring in some more income and push us over the £50,000 mark.
And if people want to come along, details?
Yeah. So tickets at the moment, they're on sale until midnight on Friday. Before it's a case of, calling the club to basically purchase tickets, but it is pay on the night as well. So there's every opportunity for people to come down, and support it. And it's a very straightforward adults £10, kids £5. I think it's half term in the area as well. So, there's great potential, and I think we're just intent on making it an absolutely fantastic night with lots of fun, as I'm sure Colin will provide, given the way he is. But tickets available at the moment via the Chester FC website, but also via the ticket office as well.
And if people can't make that because it is a half turn, there might be a way that there's going to be plenty of other opportunities for them to back Chester, get involved with some of the sponsorship things. There's plenty going on. Just take a look at the website, I guess.
Yeah, there's lots going on. There's also a link on the website as to, if you wanted to make a donation to the football club, and it literally is the football club. It's not going into any other pockets. We're not like that at all. But it's a great opportunity to help, the football family, as I said, has come together fantastically. And we've seen some support from lots of different clubs up and down the country. You see a similar kind of thing going on at Hartlepool at the moment, and nobody likes to see clubs in this particular situation. We've obviously been in a very worse situation, 8 years ago, and nobody wants to go through that again. But there's lots of opportunity to help, and every sort of pound or penny is greatly appreciated.
Well, we wish you well with it, Jeff. It's actually quite nice to have you back involved, really.
Thank you.
I'm sure we'll be speaking to you before the end of the season, and hopefully this game should help with the cash flow and things will get back on an even keel. But best of luck and speak to you soon. Thank you. Swampy, I did once read when Jeff first stepped down from the board at Chester that he was the nicest bloke in non-league. And you'd struggle to find someone to challenge that, wouldn't you? Because he's just so calm.
Yeah, well, he's as a supporter, he's been through the trials and tribulations of the football club, fighting against owners for many, many years, and then the club being, taking out the Football League, semi-pro football, Phoenix Club, supporter ownership. You know, if you go through all that and you've got a young family in tow as well, yeah, he's a cool, calm cookie, and he'll need a cool, calm head to make sure that the club is back floating in the right way again. But it's amazing how much it costs just to keep a football club afloat, and it's interesting to note also that the fact that with 4 days a week training, not fully professional yet, they were looking to extend contracts, weren't they, as well, from 42 weeks, I think, to 50 weeks or so, and so forth as a club. But they're going to have to reassess a lot of things at the club. And personally, I don't want them necessarily to go down. It would be unfair to say that. But I think if they can consolidate for a season in the National League North, although it is a very, very tough division, you know, when you consider a team that we played last week, were 19th in the division and full-time. And there's 8 other clubs, I think, in total in the division that are full-time. Non-league football is certainly not as non-league or semi-professional as it once used to be. So they're going to have to work very hard. And they are very much in a precarious position at the moment. Marcus Bignot, together with all those other managers that came in at a similar time this season, are all down there fighting for their lives. So we'll have to see. But I think Chester should be OK. The Colibury thing is going to be a good injection of cash. And live within the means going forward.
Okay, so on to another big name in non-league. Indeed, English football facing financial disaster and seeing fans rallying round frantically trying to save their club. It's been another busy week for Hartlepool United off the field. HMRC reportedly issued a winding up order for the club over an unpaid tax bill of £48,000, with a hearing to be heard on the 21st of March. Then the club issued a statement to say that they were yet to receive that officially, and there were also police investigations that were in relation to financial irregularities, but they were as a result of a request by the club themselves. The statement also then said that the tax bill was being settled by a fan's Just Giving fundraising efforts. And true enough, Paul's fan, Rachel Cartwright, confirmed Wednesday late evening, early Thursday morning, that the bill had been paid from the donations for her page raised by fans and fans of non-league throughout. So some good news this week, and the club have now literally just confirmed that that tax bill has been paid and that the winding up order is to be stopped. So potentially it sounds like everything's going in the right direction for Hartlepool United, but one man more in the know is Nick Nofflin, sports editor at the Northern Echo, and he joins me on the line. Good evening, Nick.
Good evening. Just a normal 24 hours in the history of the basket case of this Hartlepool United, eh?
Well, it was difficult to try and summarise it. I don't even know if it made sense, because it didn't make sense in my head. But, you know, if we could sell the rights to Hollywood, it would probably make a great story if there's a good ending at the end. But you know, you've been down the club today doing various bits and pieces. What's the mood like down there?
The mood down there, over the last few weeks, months, it's sort of just slowly eroded, bit by bit. Brick by brick, things have been falling apart. You know, everyone's just sort of been utterly demoralised, really. You know, there's no atmosphere around the ground and the camp. You know, it's always been a very compact, tight-knit club. You know, it's not the club of the big. It's never been the club of the biggest staff, the biggest operation at Victoria Park. But it's been a happy camp. It's been a bright, bubbly place. And it's sort of, over the last 12 months, it's just took a real, real downturn in fortunes on the pitch, fortunes most certainly off the field now, and it's just everything's just coming to a nasty head. And the whole situation for me, you know, as a someone who's covered the club for the Northern Echo since 1996, and you know, my first game at the Vic was watching Pools on Boxing Day in 1979. It's part of the fabric of the North East. It's part of it's an institution in the town. You know, the town hasn't got a great deal without a football club, to be honest. And sad as it pains me to say, I really don't see a positive way out of this at the moment.
And, you know, you say that the mood's not great. I've sensed that by looking at some of the forums. Even today, you know, Rachel Cartwright, just a normal fan, she's got off got onto a keyboard. She set up this Just Giving page. I think they raised £60,000-£70,000. She was looking to try and raise the £200,000, which was the original figure that was given. But she's raised this money. She's then got the details off the club and paid this tax bill. And then she's being attacked on some of the forums as well, because, you know, people saying, well, they shouldn't have paid the tax bill. But, you know, maybe there's a lack of strategy maybe all around, which has probably put the club in this position. But, you know, you've got to feel sorry for someone like her that, you know, to raise that sort of money already. But it's a bit like, you know, when there's tensions at maybe a family Christmas or something, suddenly everything sort of needles everybody else, doesn't it? And it's almost ready to explode.
It is. And, you know, unfortunately, the support at Pools for a long time now, it's been quite fractured. And it's certainly over the last few weeks and months sort of came to a head. It's very disappointing that everyone should be pulling in the same direction, but unfortunately there's too many people out there with their own strong opinions, egos, attitudes, and it's very difficult to see everyone coming together now. You know, I think battle lines have been drawn, if you like, amongst supporters, and there's a lot of infighting, you know, between supporters, you know, at games, and opinions are different. And unfortunately, in these days, the days today of social media and what goes on there, there's an awful lot of backbiting, an awful lot of, you know, attitude and bile which has come across on there. I've been on plenty of the receiving end of it myself, you know, as a professional, as a journalist. People don't agree, you know, they certainly let you know. And it's very sad, some of the abuse and some of the flack and stick that people are getting. And, you know, you mentioned there Rachel Cartwright. What, absolutely unbelievable, you know, to raise, okay, she hasn't raised it herself, but, you know, to draw that together, to put the page up in the first place, to come up with that idea, fantastic. Certainly got better than I expected to raise that much. You know, football fans from not just Hartlepool, not just Lap supporters from Hartlepool, we're talking, you know, across the globe, really. You know, non-league supporters from across the club, you know, various, you know, Pool's last away game, Ebbsfleet, 2 weeks ago, you know, there was £370-odd raised in the booklet collection for them. And, you know, the whole football community pulls together. It really does. It's heartwarming to see that. But it's, on the other hand, it's very, very disappointing when you see, you know, like you say, you know, Rachel is, if you put a head above the parapet, and once you do that, you know, you're liable to people want to snipe at you and shoot you down. And for all the good intentions, you know, there's a lot of people who think that by paying this tax bill, which she's done overnight, you know, she got the customs bank details from the club, paid the near £48,000 overnight from that bank account, and she's getting a bit of stick for it, which is very, very disappointing. Now the big thing is there's still, what, £48,000 gone, you know, there's still, she raised 86, so there's still, you know, best part of £40,000 there floating around. Now the big question is, what does she do with that?
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, that lots of different camps and, you know, people blaming one another, this person, that person. You know, the club's been very quiet, and you know, having been a press officer myself for many, many years, I can understand their position as well, because whatever you, in this situation, whatever you're going to say is going to be wrong. But, you know, they seem to be focusing on the potential white knights running along on a steed to rescue them. I mean, are there many of those sort of hobbling up and down the A179 nowadays?
Might be one on the A19, but not the A179 at the moment. to be honest, I think it's a forlorn hope now. For me, 2 weeks ago, there was the white knight appeared in the form of Chris Musgrave, a Hartlepool businessman, a very successful Hartlepool businessman, who was approached through a third party, see if he could help save his hometown club. Not a massive Pools fan by any means, not a massive football fan by any stretch of the imagination, but appreciate what the club means to the town and the area, and how much, you know, money it brings in, the profile, the camaraderie. You know, a lot of Christmas friends, the season ticket holders at the Vic, they know what it means. They're close to him. He was told it's a good thing. He was sounded out. He was in talks with the council. A deal was in place, and then when it came to the crunch, when he saw the state of the club's finances, you know, the pure mess that the accounts were in, he stepped away in an instant, because he felt, on the record, he said he could have put £1.5 million in an instant overnight, and that £1.5 million would have been the equivalent of putting his finger in the dam. You know, there was no way of discovering where that £1.5 million was needed, where it would go, any structure behind the scenes. The accounts weren't in full and weren't complete and weren't ready at the time for him to complete any sort of due diligence, which, when a football club's been up for sale already for a month, you know, surely that should be the first thing, of every penny, every ledger in order and ready for someone to come in, pick up, look at, say, yeah or nay. By the time he did look at the fracture, you know, what was left, what the accounts were there for him to see, wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. And here we are, you know, that was a month after the club was put up for sale. He was approached out with pretty much desperation, but he was someone who, you know, would Chris Musgrave be interested? Yeah, we'll try him. It was like that, really was. And since he walked away, we're two and a half weeks further down the line now, and how many of the interested parties have come forward officially? Yes, you hear rumours of a possible consortium being put together with Jeff Stelling being involved, to be honest. You know, Jeff has tried to speak to different parties, different businessmen and different people in the North East and in the area, try and pull them together. Nothing concrete has yet to come of that, although there's still a lot of talk and chatter behind the scenes. And if a football club has been up for sale for 6, 7, 8 weeks now, and there's been one interested party, and that was pretty much out of, like I say, maybe desperation, and there's no one else, I really fear that there isn't anyone out there.
Yeah, and you got to think, you know, that you clubs, every club really, we're all massive fans, but every club actually needs a businessman to run them because they're such massive entities nowadays. So many different revenue streams you need to look at, but also so many different, you know, drains on finances, that, you know, money going out left, right and centre. I know that from my own club. But
yeah,
if anyone is going to come in as a businessman and they can see that, you know, that the fans have had to donate money to pay a tax bill, that's only, you know, there may well be other tax bills that we don't know about. I can't really see too many people coming in before the club has to accept that the administration is going to be the way forward.
Yeah, I mean, administration is an option, and, you know, the chairman, Pam Duxbury, you know, she said a finger on the button at any time, the pressure to call the administrators in, it's that severe, and the club is living from hand to mouth. You know, there's a whole host of various local suppliers, companies, businesses who are owed money, who are backdating owed money, which hasn't, you know, they've submitted the bills, submitted the invoices, and the payment hasn't been forthcoming. You know, the example, if you like, the one which brought things to a head was the start of January, pools were away to Dagenham. Before the game, they were warming up in various different assorted number of training tops. They were wearing the away strip and the home strip. Thankfully, they didn't wear the, you know, it wasn't a home game, it was a away strip, so they wore the away strip, which they still had. But the training kit, the play towels and the home strip was being held to ransom by a local laundrette who hadn't been paid for so long, who had submitted an invoice or two, couldn't be paid, and so he, you know, not out of spite, out of necessity, he held onto the strips, kept hold of them, and refused to release them until he had been paid. And that's the level, you know, that's the level the club's at the moment, unfortunately. And it's, you don't like to say it, but it's Thunder League stuff. Yeah. You know, it really is at that level.
What for people that aren't fans of the club, but what is the situation with ownership of the stadium and other assets of the club? Is there an asset that you know, that maybe fans could hold on to?
Yeah, I mean, dare I say the one positive is the ground itself, Victoria Park, is council-owned, and the club pays rent to the council for it. There's been talks over the years from different owners to buy the ground. So, you know, if the worst comes to worst, there is still a football ground in Hartlepool, a good football stadium in Hartlepool for the team to play at, whatever level that may end up being. And, you know, to have to drop three divisions and start again, well, so be it. You know, you can probably possibly gain a bit of momentum by coming up rather than being in 3-4, because, you know, for the last few years, this team's been struggling against relegation. You know, okay, relegated from the Football League on the last day, the last minute of the last day of last season. But, you know, two previous seasons before then, they were clung on by the fingernails. It went down right the wire. So relegation's been a long time in coming, really. The club had been under very stable ownership for 20 years or so. IOR, an Aberdeen-based oil company, gave the club the best years in its history. You know, it was playoffs, it was promotion, it was the playoff final against Sheffield Wednesday at Millennium Stadium in Cardiff when, you know, half of Hartlepool went down there to watch it. And there were happy days, there really were heady times. But over the last few years, you know, the money had dried up and the club was just ticking over, really, rather than looking to push on. And then IOR had to sell up. You know, they were looking for a way out, and they sold. Ultimately, it's been proved to the wrong people.
Oh, Who would be the right people in football, though? I mean, we see it. We've seen so many clubs already in the National League that are in a similar position. Clubs lower, clubs even higher. You know, where does a football club really make a profit nowadays? But you mentioned, you know, potential. You know, maybe the club could regroup if it did get demoted, things like that. The problem is on the field at the moment. I mean, how can Craig Harrison do anything? He's under an embargo. He can't even sort of extend loans for players that he's already got. So, you know, as a club, as a team to be watching as a fan,
yeah.
What's the football like at the moment?
Poor, woeful, desperate. I mean, the whole club was set up probably long for it. This season, the clear aim, the stated aim was to get back in the Football League at the first attempt. Pools wanted to be Bristol Rovers or Cheltenham, who in recent years have been relegated and didn't mess about getting back out. There was a whole sort of revamp, rebranding of the club, if you like, in the summer. New badge, new strip, the ground was renamed, new manager, new players, new team. You know, everything was new and fresh to try and spruce things up. And there was a feel-good factor at the start of the season, but it was six games before they won a game. You know, it took them time to adapt. And then they picked up, went on a 12-13 game unbeaten run, which was... The outcomes probably flattered them a little bit. You know, they weren't playing great, but they were grinding out and digging out results. You felt that, yeah, this could go somewhere, this. You know, there's a bit of potential here. It looked good. But since the financial troubles kicked in sort of November time, while the players have been, you know, preying on the minds whether they'd be paid or not, results performances have been woeful, been poor, and it's, you know, 14, 15 games without a win at the moment. They've been leading in games, you know, they've been able to get in front, but they don't have the mentality to dig in, to grind things out and see victories out in games which they should have won, unfortunately.
And I guess with those loans not extendable, not able to bring other people in as well, you're going to have to revert to the youngsters and which can, you know, it can make a player in difficult circumstances. You know, it is bleak, as you said, isn't it? I'm trying to find the positives from it, and you know, maybe the fact that the non-league. Well, would you have got maybe the same rallying around you from other clubs if you were still in the Football League? Would it have been a more difficult position if you were still in the Football League, do you think?
I think Pools would be in exactly the same position if they were still in the Football League. There'd be a very poor League Two club, at the, you know, cast adrift at the foot of the table, and they'd be out of money again because, you know, what's gone on in the last 2 years and, you know, the state of the club's finances hasn't happened overnight. You know, whatever division they're in at the moment, they would still have the same financial issues. Players who've been signed and recruited haven't been good enough. You know, that's proved. You know, if last season was the worst football team Hartlepool United have ever put out on the pitch because they're relegated from the Football League, well, you know, the current team has just won that title away from that one, because this is the worst team I've seen watching Hartlepool United. There's no characters, there's no leaders, and okay, you know, the squad is hit by injuries, and you know, speaking to Craig Harrison just yesterday at his press conference before Saturday's game at Barrow, he's down to 12 fit outfield players for the game. He's lost players through injury, but he's also lost a few players because the contracts were up, the loans were up, and they're unable to extend them. You know, we saw Nicky Devedix leave for Wrexham on deadline day for £10,000. And he said there was half a dozen other players who were interested in other clubs. If any team had put any sort of money up, then Pools had to sell. Simple as that. It was a fire sale. But nobody coughed up, so they kept the players. And now, you know, he's looking at a scratch team to field on Saturday in a game which, you know, Barrow will be going into that game Saturday looking at Pools thinking, hey, we can catch these, we can drag these right into the mix. And if Pools do go into administration and a 10-point deduction, you might as well relegate them now because they won't get out of the bottom four if that's the case. But as long as they're out of administration, maybe they do have a slight chance of keeping their heads above water. But at the moment, and as proved in recent weeks, months and games, they are just not good enough.
So taking your journalist hat off, putting that fan's hat back on, and a sensible fan's hat on, ideally, if you close your eyes and reopened them, what would you want to be happening now? You know, a big paycheck coming in, a big businessman. What needs to be done from a proper fan's point of view?
I mean, utopia was 2-3 weeks ago when Chris Musgrave, the Hartlepool business man, was going to buy the club. That was everything. You know, that was, the club was saved. You know, everything was great then. You know, well, not great, wrong phrase, but everything was, you know, there's a positive outlook on things. He had plans to develop things and invest in the club, and it looked good, and that's the extent of need. You know, you need that sugar daddy, really. You know, there's talk of the supporters trust are in the background, and they're trying to raise funds to protect, safeguard the club if worst case scenario happens and it goes under, just so there is some sort of level of football still in the town. Okay, it wouldn't be the Hartlepool United we know and love today. We have a professional club which has been on the go since 1908, but there would still be a football club of sorts in Hartlepool playing at Victoria Park, and it'd be run by the supporters trust, so it would be a limited effort, if you like, what could be dragged together. But there still will be a club, still be a team to support on a Saturday. But on the other hand, is that the same as, you know, it's a hard pill to swallow to watch a team like that when you've watched a team like the club has been over the years. You know, we thought the Cinderella image of the club, the bad reputation that had gone. You know, Iowa made sure in 20 odd years that bills were paid on time, wages were paid on time, everyone was happy. But in the 3 years since they sold out, everything has just unraveled drastically, and this is, you know, in 110 years of history, this is the worst situation the club has ever been in.
Well, don't want to put off any potential buyers, but who'd want to buy a football club nowadays? <Yeah.
laughs> Absolutely, especially one which loses 1.8 million a year, apparently.
Well, yeah, that's much deeper pockets than I've ever had. So, yeah.
Me too.
really appreciate your time, Nick, for your honesty and your knowledge and your know-how. And, the whole of non-league is behind the club and hoping that you'll get out of this hole. But it's how you climb out of the hole, isn't it? That's the key to do it the right way. We'll keep trying to keep abreast of all the situations, but hopefully we'll be in contact with you again, Nick, with some better news, but hopefully before the end of the season.
Fingers crossed, but yeah, no problem, anytime.
So to some happier news, and in a Northern bias week, a most northerly story of the season so far, this weekend sees the fifth round of the Scottish FA Cup, a competition first held in 1873, making it the second oldest competition in the world. This season, in the final 16, one club drawn at home are Highland League part-time Muscove Rangers, who host Scottish Championship Football League opposition in the form of Falkirk. Cue the David and Goliath stories often associated with the English FA Cup at the third round stage. But with the place of the quarterfinals at stake here, this is proper Roy the Rovers potential. To tell us more, Cove Rangers' John Sheeran, the manager, joins us on the line. Good evening, John.
Good evening. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I guess the biggest question is, are you going to beat the weather for this game on Saturday?
Well, we are pulling out all the stops to try and beat the weather. The pitch is going to get completely covered with covers tomorrow to try and prevent the frost being an issue on Friday night. So we've got our fingers crossed we're going to beat the weather.
And so for those that don't know, I mean, Cove is really a suburb of Aberdeen, is that fair?
It was a small village on the edge of Aberdeen. It's now been kind of merged into Aberdeen as it's grown over the years. So we, small club, small village, and we're trying to aspire to get into the Scottish League as our aim.
Yeah, and I mean, what's your average attendance at the moment?
Well, about 250.
Yeah. And this is the furthest the club's ever been in a national trophy. So I guess the whole town is sort of buzzing a little bit with this size of game.
We are all buzzing, but the other bit of this is that over the last three years we've been playing away from home because we don't have a home ground. We're in the process of building a new ground, which will be finished in April. So we've played for the last three seasons away from home.
And that was going to be one of my questions. How is that? I'm involved with the club, and we played away for 6-7 seasons. Trying to build a team, it's tough, isn't it, when you haven't got your own home ground?
It is tough. We're reasonably fortunate in that our home base is Aberdeen, so we get a lot of players out of that area there. But we've had to play games in about 7 or 8 different grounds all over the Highlands. Sometimes down in the Angus area, the Forfar and Montrose. So we've moved around a lot over the last 3 years, and the players have done absolutely fantastically well to cope with that fact.
And I guess all the players are part-time. Does that impact on the you know, time and what you can do with the players as well to sort of develop them?
Yeah, the players are all part-time, you know, and they all have jobs during the day, so we've got the mixture of joiners, plumbers, oil workers, guys who work offshore sometimes, so we've got a complete range of people. But they're all hugely dedicated to their football, and we like to think we can match some of the full-time teams as well.
And that's what games like this are all about, isn't it?
Undoubtedly. I think when the draw was first made, we were all a little disappointed we didn't get one of the big teams from the Premier League, but we're going to have probably 2,000 to 2,500 of a crowd on Saturday, so it's going to be a really big day for the club.
Swampy, I think you've got a question.
Yeah, John, well, first and foremost, congratulations for getting this far in the competition.
Thank you.
My question is just in relation to the players, do you have any support or is there any link up between Aberdeen in themselves and yourselves where you could maybe utilise youth players and the like? Or are you pretty much a traditional semi-pro club?
We're a traditional semi-pro club. We don't have any players on loan from Aberdeen. We would like sometimes to get players on loan from them, but it's not always possible. And they probably are looking to loan players out to maybe the Championship level or Division 1 in Scotland. They maybe view the Highland League as being maybe a bit too far down the food chain. But so we've got a number of players that have played for Aberdeen or been with Aberdeen in the past. And so we've got a good mixture of experience, and but we get nothing from the senior clubs in terms of loan players.
Right, OK.
And I mean, you mentioned, you know, them considering maybe you too far down the food chain, but at least now there is this a pyramid for the Highland League now, isn't there? You know, like we've got in I think it was 2014-15 where that comes in. So the winners of the Highland League play the winners of the Lowland League, and then the winners of that then play whoever's finished bottom of the Division 2, is that correct,
That's correct, yes.
And you said that you've got aspirations to go up. Is that really the focus this season? Because you're top of the table, you're 5 points clear, two games in hand. Is that the big carrot to try and get into that play, win the championship in the Highland League and get into that playoff this season?
Yeah, 100%. We kind of, that was our target at the start of the season. We won the league 2 years ago and got into the playoffs and really didn't do as well as we'd hoped. Last year we lost the league on goal difference. This year we're hoping to win it and get into the playoffs. But we've strengthened the squad and the team this year in the hope that we can make it into the Scottish League.
Yeah, and I mean, for earlier on in the show, we've spoken to clubs at Chester FC and Hartlepool United, two clubs in the National League, which is the highest level and non-league in the English Premier, and it was struggling financially. So, you say they've got this new ground, the Balmoral Stadium. I've seen the brochure; it looks lovely, which will have various facilities, academy, and everything like that. So, will that give you the structure off the field to be able to move into the football league without too many problems? Are you set up to go on and off the field to move up into that next level?
Yeah, I think we are set up to go into that. When you go into Division 2, all the teams in Division 2 and a lot of them in Division 1 are still part-time in Scotland, so you can transition into that without too much problem. You end up getting slightly more income from the FA when you move into that league as well. So we feel we're funded properly. We'll certainly have the ground and the structure to move into that league. Where you move from there is really down to can we progress up, and we hope we can eventually get to that stage where we can get up into the higher divisions. But Aberdeen as a city could cope with two teams, but so we hope to be that second Scottish League side in Aberdeen.
And I suppose from a travelling perspective, we had the Morpeth Town FC chairman on 2 weeks ago, 41 miles from the Lowlands of Scotland, and they're currently 15 points clear in their division, and it looks like maybe around 60,000 miles a year travelling if they get promoted. What's the situation for you guys like? Is it something similar, or are most of the games that you'd be playing more local?
No, we our furthest away game is Wick, which takes us nearly 6 hours to get there.
Yeah,
Brora is 4 hours. Fort William is 3.5 to 4 hours, so we do a lot of travelling, which is compounded worse, you know, the fact we've got to play away from home, which sometimes our home ground is sort of 20 miles from Aberdeen, but times we've got to play, say, at Keith or Huntley, which is 40 and 50 miles away. So we do a lot of travelling every year. And if I look at our programme in the next 2 months, we've got to play something like 20 games and be finished by the 14th of April. So if you go and work out Wednesdays and Saturdays, there's not many left to fit all of that in before the 14th of April. So we're going to be very busy in the next few weeks.
And they still call you part-time, yeah?
Yes, we class us as part-time. 2 years ago, we played 18 games in 9 weeks at the start of the season. And Celtic were complaining about playing 12 and some sort of time. And our guys are working all day.
So you'd be hoping that for no replays this weekend then?
We definitely don't want a replay. So if it's a draw with 5 minutes to go, we'll be playing five up front.
Well, I was going to mention, you know, the climate can't be. It's probably not even as kind as Manchester, where Swampy is. So, do you suffer from many postponements as well?
This year we've had quite a number. Main issue being frost this year, not so much the wet or anything. It's just been frost has been the biggest issue since beginning of December. Whereas last year we were pretty lucky; we'd hardly any games off. So it just depends. How it kind of falls, but we also, when you do well within the kind of the national competitions, it affects your league program as well, because you go to play on Saturdays when you're meant to have a league game. So like we were due to play a league cup tie on Saturday, but that should be cancelled because we're in the Scottish Cup. So these all pile up on top of the cancelled games as well.
And you have to juggle that with work and everything, and talking to us on the radio. Yeah, it's not easy being a football manager nowadays, is it?
It's great fun, though.
yeah, wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, I think when for us at this stage now in these competitions, it's like bonus games because you don't expect to get as far, and when you do, you look forward to the games. And for our players, it's a big test for them to go and challenge themselves against a championship side, which is full time training every day and working every day. So they're all looking forward to it. And you can see the buzz at training. It means a lot to them.
And with those changes that came in a few years back on, with the pyramid scheme like we have in England, has that changed the way that some of the bigger clubs look at Highland League football? You know, are there more scouts maybe looking at the players? And is it better respected now, do you think?
Well, I think it should be better respected because we had four Highland League teams in the last 32 of the Scottish Cup, so I think they should be respecting it. But I think the biggest issue sometimes is where the players live. That for them to maybe go full time with a team in the Central Belt where they might only be getting £250 a week, they can probably make more money working and playing part time football and still be with a family in the north somewhere. So I think that is the biggest issue. There's just the lack of money. In Scottish football in general is the issue with players getting a chance to go full-time.
Hmm. Well, I really appreciate your time, John. It's been great talking to you, and wish you the best of luck on Saturday. I'll be definitely looking out for your result. Hopefully, there's an unofficial Twitter account that I've already logged into, so I'll be watching your score coming through, hopefully, on Saturday, or hopefully if you get the game on. But looking out for how you progress for the rest of the season, but really appreciate your time and wish you well.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Swampy, that's all we've got time for again. We either need not to have a social life. What social life? Or we need to have a longer show, but we've probably bored people senseless. But we've been around. We've had doom and gloom. We've been, you know, as far north as we've been all season. Hopefully we'll...
Yeah, we don't do enough of the Highlands League in Scotland, do we really? But it's the division that is getting a little bit of notice, and this should be a good weekend for Cove. It's interesting because obviously you've got Cove just outside Aberdeen. They play the Highlands League. Well, there's a place in Scotland, in the Lowlands of Scotland, near Dunbar, called Cove as well. So I'm not sure if they've got a football team, but if they did, you could have maybe them meeting each other in the final, and Cove would win the final.
It would be the coveted title, wouldn't it? No.
Very good. Yes, I think it's time to go with.
Well, thanks again, Swampy.
Very welcome. Take care of yourself.
Thanks for all our guests. And for everybody for listening, don't forget you can find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, and you can put the podcast on your own website with the embeddable player at www.nonleaguefootballshow.com. Thank you and goodbye.
JIBBA JABBA.